Well, I hope you enjoy the slides and the stories that go with them. I hope also that what will happen in you is you will say to yourself, gee, Lord, how could I and my children and my family be involved in something similar? And it can be across town. It could be down to Mexico. It could be to Kenya. It could be anywhere. But my hope for the day's slideshow is not that you will go, ooh, what a lovely trip, but instead you'll say, ooh, Lord, how could we get involved so our family could have beautiful feet too? So with that said, let's put the first slide up and I'll walk you through it. The first slide, the first 3 days that we were in Kenya, my responsibilities were to work with a Christian school there. It's called West Nairobi School. It's part of a network of international Christian schools. I'm on their international board. I've been with them for a number of years, and we have schools in, I think it's 19 countries now. The principal in Nairobi invited me years ago to come, and I didn't get it to work out until we put this kind of together with the folks from Saddleback. So I wanted you to see what it looks like. That's their lunch area. Now, you remember that Kenya is right on the equator, which means lots of rain and lots of sun, so lots of green. Everything in his uncle grows there. Look behind it. You see that band of trees behind the buildings there? There's a field between the buildings and then the trees. That's a natural preserve, and there are monkeys all throughout it. The principal told us in the afternoon, after the kids go home, he can hear all the monkeys playing up there. And there is a particular baboon that was harassing them for a while, and he had to take his baseball bat to him, so... Anyway, this is what the campus looks like, and theoretically this is going to work. But at the current moment, it is not working. Hello? Well, that's cute, but no. I'm pushing the right side, as told, and nothing is happening. I'm pointing. Oh, go back. It worked? Oh, it won't let me go back. Previous, go down one. How do I go down? Oh, there we go. Previous, enter, enter. Okay, good, thanks. Who was that? My associate. Okay, how about you? I wanted to show you this slide so you could see what the classrooms look like. Again, a very lush campus. My responsibility was to speak in chapel 3 times a day. And they made a chapel out of an old building, just kind of knocked off one of the walls, and the kids sit in plastic chairs. I did 2 chapels a day. I did an after-school in-service with teachers each day. At lunchtime, I either met with a bunch of parents or their board. In 10 days, I spoke 29 times, and none of them were the same. None of them. And they ranged from little bitty kids in chapel. They asked me to preach at a church. I've never preached at a church before. Oh, that was an experience. And they didn't ask me till the day before. Yes, hello. And all kinds of things in between. But it was fun being with the kids in chapel. They actually sing, unlike our junior hires. And I had a good time with them. The Christian school there is primarily for the expatriate community, which means English-speaking, not necessarily Christian, although a lot are, business people, diplomats, kids, anybody that wants a Western-style education in English. And so their kids... look a lot different than the kids that are in our school. Just glance there. That is a world within a classroom, and that's what really happens at all of the NIC schools, because the kids are from all over the world. They're in Kenya. They're not third generation, expatriate kids. So the guy on the left in red, I think he's from Sweden. Heaven knows where all the rest of them are from. And that's what a NIC school looks like. So when your kids are here at Stony Brook and they have a NIC school connection... Many of our teachers have traveled to NIC schools. That's where they're going, is to go to a classroom where businessmen, diplomatic kids, military kids, they pay us to give them the gospel. It's kind of a cool strategy, actually. One afternoon, when we were finished with the speaking, we were asked if we'd like to go to see 2 things, an elephant orphanage and a giraffe park. They were nearby. This elephant orphanage was actually featured in 60 Minutes last Sunday or the Sunday before. For about 25 years, this lady has been rescuing orphan little elephants, and she's got quite an operation now. What happens is elephants are killed for their tusks, and then if mom's killed off, here's the baby. The baby has to eat every 3 hours. So if they don't rescue the baby will die immediately. And so she rescues them, brings them, assigns them a keeper, who sleeps with them 24/7, feeds them every 3 hours, and every week or two they swap out keepers so they don't get connected to just one. And once they're up and old enough and healthy enough, then she goes and turns them loose into the world. Barbara being the lover of anything with, as she would say, brown eyes, was all over this. They were all over her. Brianne and I were sitting there, oh yes, that's lovely, don't touch us. This one, on the other hand, was all over them. What's interesting about these guys is the edge of their ears get sunburned very easily, and Mama normally coats them down with what would be the equivalent of sunscreen, but because they have no Mama, they have to rub them down with sunscreen on a real regular basis so that they'll be all right. They feed them just like a baby, out of a baby bottle. Now, off screen, not on this picture, in fact, I don't think I have a picture, no, I don't, there was a white rhino, and they had raised them from him since he was little, but you don't get to touch the white rhino because they will eat you, so we just waved at the white rhino. We went over to the gorilla park, not gorilla park, excuse me, that would not be a gorilla. Okay, I'm getting there. This little guy is probably about 18 feet high. And there's a platform we're standing on, and you get to feed them. Now, again, Brianna and I went, no, thank you, we're not touching you. They have a tongue that's probably that long. And the missionary took the little pellets that they feed them. Oops, okay, magic. Well, I'll tell you about them in a moment. Wait a minute, I want to go back. How do I do that? Where's my associate? Take me back. You don't know how to go back? Oh, there we are, good. At any rate, these guys have this long, narrow tongue, and they take the little pellets and put it between their lip, and then, you know, the giraffe will grab it and eat it. Not me, no thanks. Barb was all over this guy, hugging on him the whole bit. You can see I'm kind of, nice to see you. What I wanted to show you in this slide is that house that's in the back. It's called Giraffe Manor. It is an unbelievably gorgeous inn. And if you stay there, and I understand it's about $500 a month, no problem, we'll put our money, a night. Anyway, we'll put our pennies together and stay there. The bedrooms are upstairs, and in the morning you open your window and you feed them out the window of your inn. Sounds like a fun place, huh? Yeah. All right. Anyway, the next picture is the picture of warthogs. Now, it's kind of interesting. Brianna told the kids yesterday when she did it that in the movie Lion King, that's right, a couple of the characters were warthogs, and she named them. I can't remember what they were named, but warthogs are interesting animals. They're not very protected naturally. So what they like to do is go live where the giraffes are, because the giraffes are very good at stomping things. Out on the safari, giraffes, elephants, and lions are the three most dangerous. And so warthogs will seek out where giraffes are. They moved these giraffes in, kind of picked them up out of somewhere and moved them into this reserve here. And no sooner had they done it, a few months later, here came a couple of families of warthogs, moved in because they were going to be protected. Oh, there's the manor house. That's not too bad, is it? Okay, well, I'll go there instead. At the end of the first 3 days, or on the third day, Barbara, Brianna, Kathy, and Beth were at a women's conference in Nairobi. They had invited, 800 and some odd people, 200 or so, showed up at this conference. Kathy spoke all day Wednesday, and then when I got finished at the Christian school on Thursday morning, I spoke all day Thursday. I didn't have to have a translator here because Kenyan people typically speak three languages if they have any education at all. They speak their tribal tongue, and there are 42 tribes in Kenya. Roughly equivalent to races, if you will, in our country. They look down on each other. They have pecking orders. They have who's the smartest, the brightest, the most talented, who earns all the money. It's disgusting. And then they group them together. Six or seven of them will get in a group, and then the three groupings there are, they have labels for each other, too. But they know their tribal language. They know Swahili, which is the language of the country, and then they know English if they've had any education at all. So these women from Nairobi had enough English to be able to understand us, especially if I slowed down, which I did after they nagged me. I had a long black skirt on. You do not wear pants around Kenyan women. I had pants on at the Christian school only because the staff there does, the international flavoring. But once we got ministering with the Kenyan women, no one wears pants. So we had long skirts on at all times. And somebody brought me one of those colorful wraps, and so I put it around my black skirt. I spoke from 9 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon with about an hour's break at lunch, and they just ate it up. They just ate it up. They were an amazing group. I am utterly convinced that when we go to heaven, we're all going to sing in the language of Swahili. We're not going to sing in any other language. We're singing in Swahili. These people can sing. They can worship. Oh, my gosh. What happens is they don't even necessarily have song leaders, although sometimes they do, but not always. Somebody will start a chorus. So over here, one of you will start a chorus, and it'll be a loud, strong voice. Everybody will jump in. Everybody knows it, sings to the top of their lungs. Somebody over here will start dancing down the aisle. Somebody over there will start a group over here. Somebody over here will take up a refrain against that song, and half the crowd will go with the refrain, and half the crowd will go over here, and they will sing it for 30 minutes. Pretty soon, everybody's moving, dancing, greeting, singing, gorgeous voices, unbelievable worship in Swahili, unbelievable worship. Small groups, at the end of the day, they had an opportunity to talk about what we spoke on. Barb got to be involved in a small group and hear a little bit about their life and the application of God's Word to their life. Okay, there we go. Some more of the small groups. I wanted to show you this slide only because of the coloring. Why don't you go ahead and turn the rest of the lights out, sweetie? Maybe it'll be a little easier for people. We didn't darken all the windows, but maybe that'll help some. They love colorful clothing. And I don't know about in Nairobi as much as I do out in the country. A woman might own three sets of clothing. All three of them are going to be like suits or dresses with jackets and very colorful. And they wash everything by hand. Nothing is dry cleaned. So they're outside washing up whatever it is they wear, and they love the colorfulness of their outfits. This is the team. In the back left is Beth Turton, then the lady next to her in the back is the pastor's wife of the sponsoring church. The lady to her right happened to be one of the song leaders. She has an unbelievable voice. You remember her name, Barb? Charity. Front left is the lady who's in charge of ICM, or at least the women's ministry's part, Mrs. Maiori. There's Kathy next to Brianna and then Barb. Brianna, to my great joy, sat in these conferences, took notes, entered into discussions. I was pretty happy. Well, when we left Nairobi, we went down to fly to the city of Katali. And a quick word about flying in Kenya. Once you get to Kenya, you go to what they call the commuter airports, loosely translated airport. We got there, and we were going to go through security. And Barb realized she had a pair of scissors or something in her jacket pocket, so she was freaking out trying to tell me, I can't go through security because I got... Well, I'm sitting watching security thinking, this is not a problem. So I said, never mind, just walk through, and she did. She walked through the metal detectors, the everything, nothing went off, kind of a joke. Anyway, so you walk through there and you walk outside. You're not in a waiting room, you're outside on the runway. And there are two or three little planes sitting out there, and I do mean little. The largest plane we rode on in Kenya did not take more than maybe 30 passengers. And so we're standing out there, and we got this little plastic boarding card in our hands. We have no idea which plane goes with this. There's probably 20 or 30 other Kenyan people out there, so I needed to go to the restroom. So I said, you know, it's not time to go. Yeah, we got 35 minutes or something. So I went around, found a restroom, which, by the way, when we're not on tape, I'll give you an accurate description of their restrooms. But anyway, so I'm in the restroom, and all of a sudden, Barb comes running around, screaming to the top of her lungs, we got to go, we got to go, the plane's leaving. So I jump up, grab my britches, and go running out the door. I don't believe they were zipped up. And I get to the end of the tarmac, and the rest of the team was running between airplanes, one of which had kind of a jet engine. We're literally at the end of the plane. You can put your hand out and, you know, go by it this way. Nobody's telling you, don't run here, don't step here, watch out for jet wash. None of that. So I'm running across the tarmac trying to get into this little plane that they were lined up to get on. And the whole people that were standing out there were just cracking up laughing at me. Then they waved us off, wrong plane. I don't know how they thought it was the right plane. So then we had to turn around and go face all those people while I'm zipping up my britches and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. Anyway, we flew to Katali. Katali, by their standards, is a larger city. It's not like Nairobi. no high rises. The tallest building was 3 stories, I think, an office building. Has 2 big stores. I shouldn't say big stores, kind of junior versions of a Walmart or a Kmart. Then we went out, we were going to visit some local ministries. We were en route to one, and I saw these kids standing by the side of the road. And I was immediately taken by the sweatshirt on the kid on the right. Do you recognize that? CVCS, Capistrano Valley Christian School, right down the road from us. And we found out later, Beth Turton's foster son, who traveled some of the way with us, he goes to the same orphanage that this kid's in, and she's very sick. I don't know if you can tell by her stomach, but she is very bloated. She is starving literally to death. And I want you to pray for that child. I don't know her name, but Brianna had some insight into her life. Then we went to the Oasis of Hope Children's Center. Our junior high school supports this ministry. That building is probably 60 feet long and 15, 20 feet wide. It's right in the middle of a little cul-de-sac of businesses. It was started by a young man who was not even 20, I don't think, at the time he started it. What it is it's a drop-in school for street kids. So if you don't have a mom, you don't have a dad, you live on the street, you can come to this school early in the morning. They'll feed you some porridge. They'll put you in the classroom. They'll attempt to teach you to read and certainly give you the gospel and then feed you a lunch. So you get 2 meals a day if you drop in at Oasis of Hope. There were 110 kids being ministered to by them when we were there. There's no real field. That's just a little grassy area in the front. These are the kids that were standing waiting for us to arrive. They range in age from little, 3, 4, right on up to 17, 18 years old. Boys and girls. Everything they own is on their backs. That's what she owns, is that dress. Most of them without shoes, some with. That little girl's pink dress, that's probably all she owns. That little bag, my junior hires, or our junior hires, put that together. It has a toothbrush and toothpaste and some soap, a comb, and some candy. And when I handed it to them, I was crying simply because I was overwhelmed by these kids. And they wouldn't open them. They wouldn't open them until all of them had it. They all went in the room, and then they gave them permission to open them. There they are just looking at them. You can see the businesses around. I was playing a little soccer out there with them. I did a pretty good header at one point, but other than that, that was about it. That was a very moving experience for me. This little girl, I believe Brianna said her name was Josephine. She's 14 years old, and that is her baby. She's not the youngest mother at Oasis of Hope. I believe the youngest was either 10 or 12 years old. Remember, she lives on the streets. She's probably a glue kid. She sniffs glue so that she can endure the cold and the lack of food. And she had a baby. The baby could either be from prostitution or incest. Could be her dad or a brother or an uncle. She keeps the baby because it helps her in her begging. And she's more likely to get more food. Barb took one look at her and said, "We got to go to the store." And we went to the store and bought up baby clothes and shoes and blankets so that the baby could stay warm. Need to pray for that young girl. She's coming to Oasis of Hope, and hopefully she will find a ministry there. That's the principal's office. I think that all of the books that are associated with that school are on that desk. That's it for 110 kids. Oasis of Hope is worthy of our support. They have a representative here in Southern California who apparently went with Saddleback on one of their first trips, and she's gotten all involved. Her name is Lydia, and we're trying through our ministries here at Stony Brook to support this place as well. We took money when we went to add to their ministry. Also, we're sending stuff back. The junior high kids have fundraising efforts, and they're supporting it. Yesterday, the representative from True Grit's Uniforms, where you all buy your uniforms, the kids, I asked her if she had any leftover supplies, and she said, "Well, we just ran 300 sweatshirts for a school in the area and messed up the order." I said, "Can I have those 300 sweatshirts? I know exactly where to send them." She said, "Sure." So the group from Saddleback's leaving in 2 weeks, and they're taking 300 sweatshirts from a school in our area. And in a minute, I'll show you why that's so humorous. But anyway, that's what they have for the school office. That's the school classroom. And there are the school educational supplies hanging on the wall. That's all they've got. They'll put 110 kids in that room around a couple of benches, either on the floor or on actual benches. And the floor, of course, is just dirt. This is a home of one of the students, started at Oasis of Hope, and now I believe is at Purpose Driven Academy, which is a Christian school in town that's associated with the ministry at Saddleback. This is a piece of plastic, like a plastic tent. The child's mother is mentally imbalanced. She is not all together. She has two children, one of whom sleeps every night with her in this tent. And he started at Oasis of Hope, and then they got him placed in the other Christian school. He goes to school in the morning, he gets something to eat, he has his education, and he comes home and sleeps in that every night. It is an amazing place with amazing needs. This is a picture of one of the buildings of the seminary that ICM is in charge of. When Campus Crusade and the Jesus Film Project 15 years ago or so hit Eastern Africa, they went to lots and lots of villages showing the Jesus film. And at the end of showing the film, of course, they do evangelism. People come to know the Lord. Then the Campus Crusade people would stay for a few months training those people in what the gospel is all about. Well, at the end of the training period, they got to leave. They got to go somewhere else. So let's say, you know, all these ladies here came to know the Lord at XYZ Village. What they would do is on their way out, they go, Lydia, you're the pastor. You're just one of the guys that got saved, but you get tagged. And so now here you are pastoring this little church of 20, 30, 40, 50 people with no education. So ICM is committed to training all of those indigenous pastors and pastors' wives in biblical ministry. So they have an incredible seminary in Kitale. It's one of the nicest looking facilities in all the places we went. Okay. We're on to a second section. We'll give you a second. We couldn't put them all in one PowerPoint, so hold on a second. Da 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 da. How are we doing, Peg? Coming? Yeah, what we need is the next set of slides. It's a totally different. Go to new. One more down. Okay, now she remembers. We're good. Okay, thank you. This is the next set. This young boy on the right or on the left is Paul, Beth Turton's foster son. She found him in an orphanage, decided over a period of time to sponsor him. They have paid for his education, got him off the streets. He was orphaned, an unbelievable story in and of himself. And he traveled a lot with us. So Brianna and Paul were hanging out a great deal. He has quite a story. He emails Brianna now, and they are the most precious emails you would ever want to hear from a 16-year-old boy halfway around the world. They are very precious. I hope that she maintains that friendship for her entire life. Okay, good. This is Sister Frida's Medical Center. One of the ministries that they sponsor in the Kitale area is this woman's hospital. It is a clinic, and by their standards, a very fine clinic. When we got in there, I think the next slide shows it. Why don't you go ahead and just click for me, dear? For some reason, there you go. There's where they have babies. You will notice there's only one stirrup. They don't have two. So the night before we were there, someone had a baby right there. That is the labor and delivery room. They do their very best to keep it very clean and all that, but it is certainly interesting standards. Go to the next slide. Barb got into a detailed conversation with this gentleman. If I remember rightly, he had diabetes and malaria, and there was no malaria medicine. Malaria is the number one killer in Africa. It isn't AIDS, it's malaria. And it is completely preventable, either with the mosquito nets that the ministry that Brianna was so involved in, we raised money to buy nets for, or if they get malaria, if they can get to the medicine. But the medicine is about $4,000, so no one can afford the medicine. So this guy is going to die if he doesn't get medicine. So Barb came running out and goes, we need to get some medicine for this guy. And so we were able to send somebody into town to get some medicine and pay for his medicine. Our prayer, of course, is that he also has the hope of the gospel in his heart as well. Next one. When we went to Sister Frieda's, she apparently realized that one of the neighboring villages, it was too far for these kids and they're too poor to even go to Kenyan school. So she started this school for like 4 and 5 year olds. I think there's some 3 and 2s in there actually, but that's the idea, kind of getting them ready to go. I guess we'd call it a preschool, but not really. And I went out there to play with the kids and I noticed something very interesting. Let's see if you notice it. Do you notice anything? You see our uniforms in there? Yeah. And then there's St. Margaret's in there, and there's some Capo Valley. Well, what's funny is I found out later that Mindy Greer, one of the teachers here at Stony Brook, last summer went as part of her missions offering or her missions trip through Saddleback. She took a bunch of leftover uniforms, and here they all are. So next time we go, I'm sure we're going to see all the ones from this other school that we just got littered. That's all those kids own. That's all the clothes they have. They wear them every day, and they show up, and they have some time, they feed them, and then put them in school. Next slide. This little guy is the brother of the boy who lives in that tent. And he's been rescued, and is going to be adopted by an American family. And they're just holding him in good shape over here at Sister Frieda's until the paperwork can all go through. Out of all the pictures that I have of Brianna on the trip, you know, some of them are cute, just dumb teenager doing their normal thing. Well, that last one, when she's down with that kid, that's the kid I want to grow up. That one right there. That's the Brianna we're praying for. And she had quite a heart for kids. It didn't matter whether they were sick or well. She had them up in her arms, and she was spending time with them. Behind him is what looks like a bunch of weeds. They by hand thresh that. They take sticks and smack it until the beans come loose. Then they move all the weeds, and they can eat the beans. Go ahead, next slide. This is just one of the kids there at the orphanage she's having a good time with. Sister Frieda's husband is the man in the back. I believe his name was Richard. And the lady on the left is the head nurse there at the clinic. This is the school where those kids go to school. It has 3 sides to it, all open, and that is it for supplies. They have a blackboard, and I think there's a slide of me teaching. Go to the next one. Oh, yes, there I am. Fat, cat, hat. That was the extent of my teaching that day. Precious kids, though. Oh, yeah, there they are threshing, smacking that stuff. They stood there all day long smacking that to get the beans out of it so they'd have something to eat. Brianna and Beth were responsible for speaking before they would pass out the nets. I mentioned earlier that malaria is preventable, but you have to sleep under a very special mosquito net. And the cheap ones that people can get their hands on, and not everybody does, have to be retreated every 6 months, and they don't last very long. The nets that Beth and her husband, through an organization called HopeSpan, have identified are the best mosquito nets in the world, and they're made in Tanzania, I believe. They're in that bundle. That bundle has 75 in them. And the ministries that HopeSpan is involved in, partners with the folks at ICM, International Christian Ministries. They go out and use the nets as a means to share the gospel. So a village will have to apply to have the nets brought to them. And part of the application process is the ICM people have got to show up. They do a bunch of ministry, and then they pass the nets out. So Brianna and Beth are passing out nets here at Sister Frieda's. Keep going. I think there's some more pictures of nets here. Am I good to go? Okay. There you go. It was great watching Brianna speak and then pass them out, and then there's some happy people going home. One net will cover an entire family. So for $7, you can save the life of 5 people. So if you're looking for something to be involved in, may I recommend HopeSpan, and we'll make sure that your donation gets to the right place. These are just some pictures of driving along what the normal Kenyan life looks like out of the big city. This would be what you might see on the side of the road, just anywhere you were driving along. Need some shoes? Stop by. Animals roaming through. That's actually a classier section of town. This is from a car window, so not very clear. This little boy is a glue boy that's going to show up in a movie that's being shown right now at Sundance Festival. Is that right, Sundance Festival? Robert Redford's, is it Robert Redford? Yeah, I think it is Redford's thing. There was an independent film called The Glue Boys, filmed in Kitale, which is where this picture was taken. This boy and another boy, I think I have another picture, yep, and that kid are in there. Our driver was part of that ministry to film that film. They got these two boys off the street, got them off of glue, got them in an orphanage, but they couldn't stand the lifestyle. There wasn't enough support to keep them going, so they're back on the street. They came up to visit with us while we were there. Here's me. You can't see me, but I'm preaching. I'm over on the left-hand side. We arrived at this church at the given time, and there were four people in the church. So I said to Barb as I walked in, oh, this is going to be fun. And the pastor invited me up. We went into his little office, and we had tea. They call it chai? Chai. It's like very sweet milk with a little bit of tea in it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm in there. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite. I'm in there drinking tea with him, and they just keep singing till the crowd shows up. When the crowd finally shows up, he goes, whoop, now's the time. So out I went, and I preached to them that morning. It was kind of interesting. We stayed in Kitale in the home of Steve Rutenbart. Rutenbart used to have the kids here at Stony Brook. He's one of the missions pastors at Saddleback. They do so much in Kitale. He has leased a house, and I think the next slide is the guest house, and that's the guest house, and we stayed in there. It has big bunk beds in it and real-life bathrooms. Not great, but real-life bathrooms and fairly decent accommodations. So we were there, what, two nights going in and one night coming out, I think. What's interesting is one of the ladies asked me, did I have any laundry? And I said, yeah. I mean, we've been gone a week and a half by that time or so. So I had five or six pair of undies and a couple of blouses. I gave it to them, assuming that they had, in that fairly modern complex, washing machine and dryer. The next morning at 5:30, I got woken up. The ladies were out there with a washboard washing my underwear by hand and ended up hanging it on that line. In fact, that might be my underwear in the back left. Talk about humbling experience. Whew, give me my undies back. The ladies that are in this picture are the women that partner with Beth and Hope Span and take out those nets as part of their ministry. I think I have one more picture of them. Yes. The lady on the far left, her name is Jane, and I want to tell you a quick story about Jane. She is as buck-teethed as anyone I've ever met in my life. Her front teeth go out that far from her bottom teeth. I doubt that she has a third-grade education. I believe she's the pastor's wife. She's not very attractive. She's very tall and very gangly. Her hair is a kind of a very coarse, a dark gray kind of hair. She is a very pleasant woman to be around, but not much to look at, and you wouldn't give her much credit to have much to say. She was telling us a story when we were sitting right here in this room of the last time they went out and took nets. I don't have the time to tell you the whole story, but the short of it is, none of them have vehicles. They don't have vehicles of any kind. So they had to borrow somebody and somebody's car. Then they take one of those big bushels and either put it up on top or cut it all up and stuff it in the car around them so they can drive out to this village. En route to the village, the car broke down. They ended up spending the night beside the car. They have to wait for somebody to come by to help them and somebody to take them to find a part and somebody to come back. I mean, it was a three-day ordeal just to get the car repaired. They finally ended up at the place where they were supposed to be to distribute the nets. It was a church, but she knew that the church wasn't a strong gospel-preaching church. So they were very prepared to do a whole presentation. It was Jane's turn to speak. She got up and she presented the gospel to about 150, 200 people sitting in the audience. She got to the end of the gospel presentation and she said, now if there's anybody here that would like to receive Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, and she explained what all that meant, why don't you stand to your feet and I will pray and help direct you to the next step. Every single person in the auditorium stood up. She stood there and looked at them and went, okay, I've not done a good job. They don't understand. And she went on with her story. She said, I stopped. I looked at him and said, you obviously don't get it. Let me start again. And she started again with another full, complete, thoughtful presentation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Got to the end and said, now this time, if you really, really, really want to get saved, raise your hand and wave it at me. The entire auditorium broke out in waving. She led the entire Christ an entire church to Christ that day. All because they have a $7 net that people want. Pretty amazing ministry. Anyway, Jane deserves our prayers. This is what the roads look like as you go up to Mount Elgon. We left Katali, which is kind of a medium-sized city, and went up into the hills. There are no cities up here. They're not even villages. There are a few wide spots in the road. Mount Elgon is the largest mountain in the world, surface area. Not heights, but surface area. And that's the roads. It rains constantly, and sometimes you can get up and sometimes you cannot. In fact, the day we went up and the day we came back, it was iffy whether we were going to make it up the roads. If your car slides off, it doesn't go anywhere. It just goes into a ditch, and then you just wait until enough people show up to lift you out and get you out of the muck. When we got to the place we were going, the seminary they're trying to build up in the mountains, this is what it looks like. They don't have enough money to finish that. So if you got any money laying around, give it to me, and I'll make sure they get it so they can finish this building. There's a little white building, the first part of it, you can kind of see it off to the right, which is their dormitory, where their speakers stay. I put the word dormitory in quotes, because you would not spend one night there. I guarantee it. We had bunk beds in the rooms. Our particular room had two regular single beds. They were gracious enough to put clean sheets, their version of clean sheets, and clean blankets on the bed. There's no electricity. Half the time, no running water. If it is running, it's brown. And you stay there and then come down to another room. Well, there's the outdoor potty places if you care to use those. We did not. We used the ones that were inside. There's a picture of our room. You pulled the curtain back so you could see until the lights went out. They had a generator, which some of the time they ran. That's the sink where we brushed our teeth, washed our face, and tried to wash our hands. I was so proud of Brianna. She held up through the whole time we were up here. This was the last thing we were doing before we left to go to safari. And she washed her hands. She tried to shower. Shower, you take this little plastic thing. You fill it full of water. You boil the water so you can get some hot and put it in there. You hang it up. You step into this little cubicle. And you put some water on you, lather up real good, put some more water on you, quote, shower. The first time I did it, I was in there, and I'm blind without my glasses. So I have my glasses off, and I'm in there doing my shower thing. And all of a sudden, and there's a window in it. Now, the window just looks out over fields, no big deal. Except I'm doing my thing, and I look out the window, and someone in a red sweater walked right by the window. A little later in the day, I saw the gentleman in his red sweater. This is the shower window that I was just referring to. Anyway, the very last day, Brianna came in our room. She threw herself down on my bed. She put her head in my lap, and she started sobbing. I've had it. I can't get clean. I can't. I can't. I can't. She wanted to go, but she went off during the day with Kathy and Barb and Beth. They did a women's conference. They did a teen conference. And the women's conference was 1 or 2 days, and the teen conference was 1 or 2 days. Brianna spoke at one point on purity for about 20 minutes. We were so proud of her. And then they also made their presentation about nets each place that they went. I think there's a picture of the house here. There's the nets. That's what the nets look like. And, of course, they just hang from the rafters. Oh, well, we've got to go back. Can I go back? Okay, previous. Okay, go back up here. Come on. Go up there. Go. No, over here. Go over here. Hey! Okay. This is a picture of the seminary room. So during the 4 days they were doing women's and teen conferences, I was teaching these pastors' wives. This building is the first building they actually built up there. You can see it's just pieces of wood stapled, a kind of windows, sort of, a tin roof. The back is just pieces of plastic across the back. I'd be teaching, and the cow would stick her head in that window and moo. The donkey would get behind me and be, baying, whatever that is, making noise while I was trying to teach. And at one point, a mouse, a rat, something came scurrying in the back door, and the chickens came chasing it. So you're standing there teaching, the chickens are going back and forth. But I tell you what, these women right here, I would go across the world again in a heartbeat to teach. They are as dedicated and as godly women you will find on the face of the earth. They want nothing more than to know God's word and be able to minister with it. They sat there 4 days in a row from 9 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon in those cruddy little plastic chairs with that little quote-quote desk. All they own, maybe, is a pen and that little notebook deal. They wrote every word I said down in that little notebook. They are phenomenal people. The second one in from the left in the front with kind of the brown sweater on, I don't think she can read. But I tell you what, that woman has such depth in Christ. Behind her, the lady in the tan outfit, she confessed to part of our team that her and her husband, who are pastors, she doesn't even have enough money for underwear. And her children don't either. The lady to her right, her name is Fannis. She has a son who's a pastor and one who ran away from home. I want you to pray for Fannis's boy, that he shows back up. The one beside her in the back row is named Malik. And Malik wants to get involved in politics. She asked me if it was legal for Christians to get involved in politics. That room is full of saints. We're talking giants of the faith. And their combined education probably is not as much as our kids in kindergarten. They are phenomenal women. I would go back there in a nanosecond to speak to them. The gal here in the front left was my interpreter. These guys' English isn't all that great. And this is, her name is Susan. She tried to translate for me. It was challenging for both of us. She would let me talk on for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes and never say a word. And then I would go, "You want to tell them?" And she'd, "Oh, okay." And she'd tell them something. And then they'd answer and I'd go, "You want to tell me what they said?" "Oh, yeah." And then, oh, it was a challenge, but we got through it. They have some pictures in the back, kind of like Sunday school pictures. And very interestingly, all their pictures of Jesus are black. There's me teaching away. That's it. We got one whiteboard, one little whiteboard, clock that didn't work, and a light that didn't work. There was no electricity in there. A phenomenal experience. There's the gal right there. Barb and the other group went up to one of the pastor's wife's homes for tea one day, and it started raining. So when they were walking back, that red mud clay stuff got all over their shoes, and it was a mess. And the next morning, we got woken up to some ladies at that same sink where we were brushing our teeth and everything else. They were scrubbing our shoes at 5:30 in the morning so that our shoes would be clean. This lady here was doing some of the scrubbing. She's the one who doesn't have any undies. And I'm telling you what, you got any extra money, get it to me, and I'll make sure that they take it to her on their next trip. Last set. How you doing? You all right? You bored yet? Okay, you're not bored yet. Got one more 30 slides, I think. Oh, another shot of trying to get off the mountain. That car right there has Brianna and Paul and some other people in it. Barb and I are in the car behind. They are going down the hill and fishtailing, left, right, spinning. We're in the car behind. We had to carry the live chicken. When you do a good job up there speaking, they give you this live chicken. I said, "No, thank you," to my live chicken. But the other lady that was speaking, she said, "Yes, thank you." And so we had to carry the live chicken in our car and watch Brianna and crowd sliding all over the place trying to get down the hill. Okay, so we got back down off the hill. We went to Katali, just spent one night, got up the next morning, flew back to Nairobi in a plane of about 30 people. It was challenging, but we made it. We then, later in the day, were going to do our one touristy thing of the whole trip, and that was to go on safari. So to go on safari, you have to go from Nairobi out again in a different direction to one of their natural preserves. You've probably heard of Serengeti, the Serengeti Preserve. Well, that's on the Tanzania side. On the Kenyan side, it's called Masai Mara. Same place, just on the other side. And to get there, you have to take a plane. Same back to that little airport. This time I did not go to the restroom. I had my pants all up. I was in good shape. And there was a pretty nice-looking jet sitting on the runway, you know, closest to us. And then this little puddle jumper was behind. So when I saw the nice-looking little jet, I went, "Praise the Lord, we're getting a jet. We're okay. We're good. It's no problem." Then the jet pulled away going somewhere and left us that. It seats about 11. The guy told us before we got on that it was going to take us about 45 minutes. And I looked on the map, and it was half the distance of the other 45-minute ride. And I was thinking, why would it take 45 minutes to go, 10, 15 minutes? I don't know. He said, "Oh, we have to make four stops." Four stops? Well, what I didn't realize is on Masai Mara, every one of the hotels has a landing strip. That's a landing strip. It's just a piece of dirt road. And this plane goes and stops at every one of the hotels. So it got up in the air, flew about, 5 minutes, and then went down, land, two people get out, back up, 5 minutes, land. It never got over 2,000 feet because I'm sitting where I can see all the instruments. There's only 11 people here. He never got above 2,000 feet. You're looking at all the animals underneath you while you're flying along. When we were climbing onto this plane, Brianna and I were the last two climbing on, and the pilot, who looked 17, he must have been in his 20s, but he looked 17, he came around the back and he said to Brianna and I, "Well, one of you two has got to sit up front and be the co-pilot." I beg your pardon? So Brianna goes, "I will." She goes up and climbs in on the co-pilot side, straps in all the funny stuff, puts the headset on. He turns around to us, and this was the pre-flight instructions. "Everybody okay?" Okay, can you imagine what I'm doing now? Okay, you do know I don't like to fly, right? Okay, yeah, we're good. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There's no air, there's no nothing, no bags, no peanuts, nothing. He goes to the end of the runway, winds a little rubber band up, and while he's going down the runway, he's telling Brianna, "Hit that switch, turn that knob." Brianna's over there hitting switches, turning knobs. What she told me yesterday that I didn't know until yesterday was the entire time he was flying over there, he was talking to his buddy on the radio. Anyway, we made it. The next morning we got up and we went out on the safari. They take you in a van. The van has a top that can be popped open. And as long as you stay in the van, they will take you right up to the animals. Every year somebody gets killed because they're stupid and get out of the van. But we don't have telephoto lenses, so I want you to understand, we are up close to all of these animals. It was a phenomenal opportunity to see the animals of... There's the van, the van next to us. We're sitting in the van next to it, and this is a lioness deciding to wander across in front of us. They are not domesticated animals. These are live animals out on safari. It was quite an opportunity. This is Papa, and he's got three babies climbing around underneath him, or around him. There they are, the three of them. You can see how close that van is. So what happens is, each one of the hotels have their little drivers in their vans, and they go out driving around, not necessarily on roads, just out, and then they call each other on the radio, got a cheetah, come find a cheetah. And they all go over to wherever the cheetah is. And so somebody had wired or called him and said that these were all here. This is quite a sight. I think I got several of them playing. Zebras everywhere and wildebeest kind of mixed in there. That's what the land looks like on the safari place. These are hippos. We went down to the river, got out of the van, started down the river, and our driver said, no, you got to wait for the soldier. And we said, wait for the soldier? He said, yeah, you got to wait for the soldier. You can't go down to the river without the soldier. So the soldier shows up and he's got an AK-47, live ammo, finger on the trigger. That would be a trigger. And they won't let you down to the river without this guy with his whatever. This is Cheetah with babies. It took us a while to find her, but we did. More lions. This one had just attacked a wildebeest, gorged herself. And left the wildebeest for the jackals. And we pulled up just as all the jackals were there. Oh, my goodness. Listening to them crunch with the bones and all that. Ooh. Circle of life. Yeah. We went to a Maasai village. Maasai is one of the 42 tribes of Kenya. They're the top of the pecking order, Maasais are. And our driver took us to a Maasai village. He pulled up, stopped, and then left. Now, I want you to picture, here's the five of us with a 17-year-old kid. We're in the middle of nowhere, no forms of transportation, no forms of communication, and out come all these guys and circle us. Now, I'm not real comfortable. I'm not a happy camper. Then they say, well, one in the middle, his name is Joseph. He said, we're going to do a dance for you and da-da-da. We're going to show you the village, and then you can go look at our little trinkets and see if you want to buy them. So, obviously, this is kind of a tourist deal here. But I was still very, very uncomfortable. So he says to Brianna, you're of marrying age. You watch us dance and you pick out the one that you want for your husband. We judge it on the basis of how high we can jump. So they get into this knockdown, drag out dancing routine. Then they bring the ladies out and they want all us to dance. I said, no, thank you, that I was the photographer. Sorry, can't dance. Brianna's having quite a little time here with the dancing Maasai warrior girls. Then he took us into their village. They put them in a circle because they bring all their cattle in at night inside the village. That's how they protect them. They're nomadic people. Those homes are made of dung, D-U-N-G, and mud mixed together, and they slap it on sticks. And he took us in one of these. I don't think we have pictures of inside now. There's Joseph. He took us in one where the child was dying in there. Why he picked that one, I still don't understand. But he took us in there, and then he came out and he said he wanted to negotiate for Brianna. So I said, well, what's the going rate? And he said, well, the going rate is 10 cows. And Barb piped up and said, we ain't taking 10, 12 minimum. And so he countered with 14. So I said, no way, she's worth 20 cows anyway. 20 cows, take it or leave it. And they were cracking up at that moment right there, the two of them. He's actually going to be a medical student in Nairobi next year. This is the last slide, and I have it on here on purpose. That right there is the largest slum in the world. It's on the hillsides of Nairobi. Inside there are 10-roofed little huts, many of whom are made by those plastic trash can bags that you and I get when we go to the grocery store. There are literally thousands upon thousands in that one slum area. And the truth of the matter is there are Christian ministries that are setting up churches and other kind of ministries to win these people to Christ. It's not bad enough that their life is desperate, but they may end up slipping into eternity and never seeing the face of God. So my challenge to you is the same one that I started with. Not everybody in this room is going to go to Kenya, although lots of you could. But you could go somewhere. We got people in Orange County that need to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, that need a helping hand, a gracious act. We have opportunities here at school. We have a family mission trip going to Ecuador this year during Easter vacation. It's all set up for you. All you got to do is pay the bucks and go. It's safe. It's secure. It will give you and your children, I think it's third grade and up, the experience of a lifetime. Go. Go with your church down to Mexico. Build houses. Work with an orphanage. Do something. Because there are people all over the world waiting to hear the good news of Jesus Christ. We were nothing special. And yet we had an opportunity over a two-week period of time to have a phenomenal experience seeing what God's doing around the world. God does not have a white face and lives in the United States. His work is out there. Those people don't need me to bring Jesus. When I got to that classroom with those pastor's wives, I wasn't bringing Jesus in the door. He was there in the lives of those people. They just needed a little bit of help learning some things that I had and take for granted. They need books. You ought to see the seminary library. My library is 10 times as good as the seminary library that all of their pastors and pastor's wives use. So there's opportunity everywhere to get involved. If the Lord happened to tweak your heart this morning, great, let me know. We'll get you in touch with the right people. And if not, then find a place for you to get involved. Missions isn't something you should hear about. It's something we all should be doing. So with that in mind, let's close in prayer. Father, thank you so much again for the privilege of being a part of this trip and all of the other opportunities to see you at work around the world. You don't need us, Lord. We need you. But there are people who need what we could offer. And I pray that you would burn that into the hearts of all of us. Beautiful feet are not smart feet or educated feet or intelligent feet or people that have particular training. They are just beautiful because they're willing to go. And I pray that you give us opportunities, perk our hearts by the Holy Spirit in the ways that we could get involved all around the world. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, thanks for coming. It would have been no fun without you. I did want to make one quick announcement, and that is next week we're going to start a new series. About 10 years ago, I don't remember how long ago now, Stephen Curtis Chapman came out with a CD called Heaven in the Real World. Are you familiar with that CD? If not, you need to all go buy it. Sunshine won't have but two copies, but ask them and they'll buy some more. And I am going to use that as a jumping off spot for about 5 or 6 lessons. It is my favorite lessons I've ever done in my life. I'm going to redo them all. I don't think anyone, with the exception of maybe Peggy, has ever heard it. And so I hope it will be a challenge. The idea is, how do we live in this world when we weren't made for this world? And I hope it'll be very practical and meaningful for you. So Heaven in the Real World. And if you want to get started, you can go get a CD and start listening to the songs, and we'll thematically work our way through that material. All right? Thanks for coming. Good to see lots of new faces. Hope to see you next Tuesday. Bye.